Yesterday, House Republicans voted to pass the CHOICE Act, which would effectively repeal major portions of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act.
The Dodd-Frank Act was passed in 2010 following the Great Recession as a way to avoid another financial calamity. But the act has been criticized by Republican lawmakers as being too stringent, and President Trump has been largely supportive of its repeal.
Karen Coons joins us now. She's an associate professor of public administration at West Virginia University. She's also the co-author of When the Levees Break, Reimagining Regulations in the Securities Market. Karen, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, Karen, first let's listen to a clip of House Speaker Paul Ryan talking about the CHOICE Act yesterday.
This also repeals the too big to fail, which makes taxpayer bailouts of Wall Street a thing of the past. Simply put, this is a jobs bill for Main Street. The Financial CHOICE Act makes it possible for small businesses across this country to stop struggling and to start hiring. I want to commend Chairman Hensley and his committee, Mia Love, and everybody on their committee. They have put years of work into this. This is a very important piece of legislation we're very excited about bringing through Congress today, because this is a key piece of our agenda to get the regulatory reform agenda put through, to get jobs growing, and to get the economic growth that we really need and deserve in this country.
Karen, you heard his characterization there, rolling back some regulations, getting at the idea that this is a CHOICE Act for Main Street, for small community banks. Do most economists and small bankers agree that some of these Dodd-Frank regulations were too strict, went too far?
I could see how they could have that perception. One of the things that we argue with, we talk about in our book, is how Congress is, through the years, ever since the big crash in 29, Congress has consistently been reactionary to anything that happens in the markets. And so even as Speaker Ryan talks about worrying about too big to fail, we argue that we're past that already. The next crash is going to be too big to save. We're going to be beyond too big to fail. So to try again to be reactionary to too big to fail, they're still one step behind the eight ball, as they consistently have been over the decades. Dodd-Frank did some great things. It established the Consumer Protection Bureau. It provided for orderly liquidation, which is what Speaker Ryan's talking about in terms of the bailout. It established the Financial Services Oversight Commission, which we would argue is just one more piece of bureaucracy. But it also established the Volcker Rule, which eliminated or sharply curtailed proprietary trading for investment companies, for investment banks, and provided for stress tests. And it provided for some oversight of derivatives, which were a large piece of the crash in 2008. There's still a lot of jobs in the derivatives market that's not regulated. So if they really wanted to do something to prevent the next crash, they could have really addressed the derivatives aspect of it, which was a huge underpinning of the crash in the first place.
I want to talk about the CHOICE Act and what it does call for. Can you walk us through some of the core changes in the Republicans' CHOICE Act?
Sure. First of all, it pretty much guts the Consumer Protection Bureau, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. They want to change it to more of a law enforcement agency, with the chairman who's appointed by the president rather than an independent agency. But then they want to gut the majority of it. So it would be almost like buying a house and paying the taxes on it and paying the utilities, but then not living there. So it's just going to be expensive. It's going to be an expensive agency that has no teeth. It eliminates the orderly liquidation aspect of the Volcker Rule. So it would eliminate the option for bailouts. The Supreme Court may have taken care of some of that as well when they decided that bailing out American General, or AIG, was unconstitutional. So to the degree that liquidation elimination has teeth would be questionable. But in any event, it eliminates the liquidation aspect of the Volcker Rule. It eliminates some of the stress tests, which is actually a great thing for the small and mid-sized banks. Opens up the markets for them to make riskier loans, which was some of the problem with the 2008 crash. It eliminates a lot of the oversight that was established in Dodd-Frank, specifically the Financial Services Oversight Commission. It eliminates that. And most importantly is it minimizes the rule about qualified mortgages, which again means that it allows banks to provide riskier mortgages.
And as I understand it, it also puts the budget of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau under the purview of Congress, which I guess could mean that the agency itself could be defunded. Is that a possibility?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what do you see as, when we look back at the Great Recession and as you were getting at some of the underpinnings behind it, what do you think going forward we see in this Choice Act that will affect whether or not this could happen again?
We looked at the different types of, like I said, most of Congress's actions in terms of managing the financial markets has been reactionary. So when mutual funds were established, then they created a law to regulate mutual funds investors. Investment advisors came along and they created a law to regulate investment advisors. We argue in the book that getting rid of Dodd-Frank is not such a bad thing, but we would get rid of a lot more than that. We wouldn't want a Wild West. We wouldn't want a market free-for-all. We would still want some basic regulation, but we're looking for a more holistic perspective when it comes to regulation and an elimination of the disclosure premise.
And what is that?
When the SEC was established in 1934 after the market crash and the laws that were passed in 33, the whole basis of our market regulation is disclosure. Companies, public companies, provide financial information, and that's what allows investors to make smart decisions. So the regulations that were passed in 33 and 34 were supposed to protect investors and eliminate or manage fraud and market manipulation and prevent that. And all of that was supposed to be done through companies disclosing what they're doing. We don't. And that was also based on the fact that you would buy Walt Disney Company because you loved Mickey Mouse and you thought the Disney Company was a great company, and you really thought that you were buying the company. We don't trade like that anymore. The market doesn't function like that anymore and hasn't for a long time. The disclosure premise has come and gone. And the idea that companies disclose their financial condition every quarter, and that creates more volatility in the markets based on whether or not they did what analysts thought they were going to do in 3 months' time, that just adds more volatility without adding any substance.
We're talking with Karen Coons right now. She's an associate professor of public administration at West Virginia State University, co-author of the book When the Levees Break, Reimagining Regulations in the Securities Market. And she's with us to talk about the Choice Act, what it does to roll back Dodd-Frank, and what effect it could have on markets and the economy.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think of this move to overhaul Dodd-Frank, change a lot of things there? Do you think that that law should be replaced or stay as it is? What role do you think Congress, the federal government, should have in regulating banks and other financial institutions? Do we need big changes? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're continuing our conversation about the new Choice Act, which would gut major portions of the 2010 Dodd-Frank Act, which was put into place following the Great Recession. Karen Coons is with us now. She's an associate professor of public administration at West Virginia University and co-author of the book When the Levees Break, Reimagining Regulations in the Securities Market.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you watching as the House voted yesterday to repeal or largely repeal the Dodd-Frank Act? What do you think Congress, what do you think the federal government should be doing with a bank and financial institution regulation? Are you worried that under the current standards or if they're changed, we might see another big crash, another great recession. What question do you have about regulations and how they work in the market? And do you worry about banks that are too big to fail or, as our guest says, too big to save if it should come to that? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Karen, you said that in your estimation, the government was making policy that was reacting to things that happened instead of looking to the future and having a smart eye to shaping policy about what might come to fruition. And you use the phrase too big to save. What did you mean by that?
We change, as I started to mention before, how we invest has changed dramatically. For starters, the retail investor does not make up a large portion of the market. And even then, what's done is primarily algorithmic trading. So it's all done with financial engineers and strings of economic models. And that's what determines whether to buy or sell. An example of that type of volatility was this afternoon, as there was talk about, as the Choice Act passed and there was talk about it going forward, the financial stocks rallied. They were the basis for the last hour's rally in the stock market. But there's no basis in a stronger valuation for these stocks, particularly given that the Choice Act is not going to get any traction in the Senate, or is not expected to get any traction in the Senate. And if they do pass something, it would still end up in reconciliation. So why people would be buying bank stocks, why there'd be this big clamor for bank stocks to produce that kind of a rally without a fundamental valuation or increase in valuation for the companies really shows how the market's changed. And again, it's not the retail investor that's driving this. It's institutional and algorithmic trading that's driving it. So the market's changed quite a bit.
So the market is not what it used to be, but can we explore a little more your question about what that means? In the past, during the Great Recession, the government bailed out the banks because they were said to be too big to fail, and that would devastate the American economy. So what does it mean if a bank is too big to save?
When a stock market can be brought down by a tweet that says there's a bomb in the White House, we know that we need to be more tech-savvy. We need to understand that the whole system could be hacked and trashed in a matter of minutes. Yet the regulators aren't funded. I mean, when you talked about the CFPB being unfunded by Congress or not included in the budget, the same thing has held true for the SEC and for the other regulators. They're not getting the funds they need to be able to catch up or to be able to stay consistent or even anticipate problems or technological advances. So there are a number of things now that could bring down the market system that the regulators aren't even able to anticipate because they're not funded, they're not able to keep up. Again, everything is still reactionary.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Maureen joining us in Waukesha. Maureen, hi.
Hi. I want to thank your guest. She's excellent at explaining complex concepts. But I have two questions. Sure. My first question is, you know, as an expert in your field, what would your recommendation be for regulation to help us avoid failing? And the other question is, you know, what your thoughts are on how politicized regulation is. Are we regulating based on what a voter base is going to vote on versus what's really good for our country?
Maureen, thanks for that. And Karen?
We really outlined what we would like to see in the book. And in a nutshell, it's based on a couple of premises. One is that whole disclosure idea of companies having to keep disclosing and adding to volatility. We say, let's get rid of that. And investors don't use that anyway. They don't make decisions based on that. The whole idea, the whole premise is outmoded. What we'd like to do is that we have a more holistic approach. Let's make companies really disclose everything there is to know about them at the start, and then never have to worry about it again unless there's a major change. So they can keep issuing stocks and bonds as long as they're stable. But they'd have to be stable first, so companies like Tesla and Twitter, who weren't profitable to begin with, wouldn't have a chance until they were. So investors couldn't buy companies that never showed a profit. There would still be the side for private investment for startups and things like that. But for the main part, we would change that. The other thing we would eliminate is the gambling concept. When you buy a stock, like, for example, when you buy Disney, you can go to Disney Company, you can open the door, you can knock on the door, you can go see the president, you can sit in the chair across from his desk. It's a tangible, there's a company there. When you buy derivatives, if you dig deep, 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 deep down, you might find a scrap of a piece of a mortgage. If you put them all together, you still wouldn't come up with one asset, one solid asset to go back to. They're gambling. It's nothing better than gambling. Futures, the same thing. When you buy orange juice futures, you're betting on whether or not the sun's going to shine. So what we say is, let's take those things that are considered investments now, that aren't, they don't go through any kind of approval before they come to market. So investors don't get, they're not savvy enough in the most part to deal with them anyway. But let's take those and call them what they really are, which is gambling, and put them under a gaming commission. Send them to Vegas. But they don't belong in the stock market.
Maureen, thank you for that call. And I want to get at an aspect that we haven't explored yet in Maureen's question. Financial regulation used to be a bipartisan enterprise, and now it seems to be more of a highly partisan process, perhaps on both sides, although maybe now more than during the Great Recession. But how has that changed things?
I think it's difficult to get things done. I think both sides are still reactionary. The consumer protection is really important. It's something that's kind of fallen by the wayside as we've evolved from the regulations that started the whole thing in 33 and 34. So investor protection has kind of slid away. The Consumer Finance Protection Bureau was an attempt to put investors back in the forefront. So I think that's still important, but how to do that, whether it should be a regulatory aspect, how we would regulate markets to put investors first, is a discussion that I don't think either side is really having.
And is it because, as Maureen suggested, politicians are too concerned about their voting base?
I think that's a large part of it. And they seem to think that eliminating regulation is the answer. But again, the Wild West of a market is not an answer. Intelligent, structured, holistic regulation is. But right now, there are a couple of dozen regulators between 8 federal agencies and self-regulatory organizations, not to mention the 50 states who all have their hands in regulation. How any brokerage firm can stay on top of that is beyond me.
Well, Maureen, thanks a lot for your call. And we're going to go next to Charlie in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thank you so much. My question is that, historically, when the pay of the top CEO was closer to the lowest worker, that there was not as much a large difference. Both the company and the United States and the workers did better. Isn't there a way to have that type of regulation where the company still exists for the betterment of the United States as well as its workers, as well as giving its top managers a great living? Isn't that the goal rather than just the pure greed that we're seeing with our current system?
Charlie, thank you for that call. And also, Karen, I believe there's a change in the House GOP Choice Act that would take away the requirement to disclose CEO pay. But Charlie's other point, what would you say to that?
That's a tough one. We tend to think that companies that we don't tell companies what to do. Whether you're Apple or the local hardware store down the street, we don't tell you how to run your company. We don't tell you how to pay your employees, other than minimum wage, the basic things, safety, stuff like that. So it's questionable whether more regulation would change that? What would make that better for the markets? Would it increase the valuation of the company for the for investors? If you were in our paradigm, what we also talk about is shifting the idea of buying stocks to something similar to buying a car or a toaster, where you would have lemon laws that would protect you if the company went belly up or did some really squirrely things. You could have recourse to getting your money back. Have labeling laws like you see on packages, food packages when you go to the grocery store. There's so much sugar, there's so much carbohydrates, there's so much protein. Well, in this case, the CEO gets this pay. The risk tolerance for people who want to buy this stock is here. So if this is really conservative or this is really a riskier type of investment, the company has 50,000 employees and 90% of them make under $20 an hour, but different types of labeling and other things, warrants, warranties or incentives for companies that want you to buy their products and to continue to buy their products. So we look at that idea as more viable than the system that we have now.
And we leave it there. Karen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure.
It was Karen Kunz, an associate professor of public administration at West Virginia University and the co-author of the book, When the Levees Break, Reimagining Regulations in the Securities Market. She joined us to talk about the House Republicans' decision to overhaul large portions of the Dodd-Frank Act.